Are you ready?
Fight fans, and welcome to another edition of the Ultimate Fight Show. I'm your host, LC, and with me, as always, is the Bragg Man, Chris Bragg. How you doing tonight, Chris?
I am doing great, now residing from Columbia, South Carolina. Trying to get adjusted to the new place, but I'm doing pretty well, man. How are you?
I'm doing great. As you know, if you listen to the show, I attended the UFC 203 last weekend in my backyard, Cleveland, Title Town, Ohio, to watch that epic event. We posted stuff on the Instagram. We'll have some videos throughout the week that you'll be able to check out at Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and all that good stuff. So, you know, and I just found out about an hour ago that my sister and brother-in-law just had their first child, who coincidentally enough was conceived in Georgia. So, you know, you moving from Georgia, all that good stuff. But, yeah, she's healthy and everyone's good. So,
congratulations to the happy family.
Absolutely. Let's get to the particulars first. You're listening to the Ultimate Fight Show. If you want to call in, the number is 1-657-383-1412. Again, this is our second week back. We're trying to spread the word. And a lot of people have been doing that on Instagram and Twitter. And I haven't looked at, you know, I'm sure that it's doing well. Brad, can you give them that information?
Absolutely. It's easiest to find us on Facebook. Just check for the Ultimate Fight Show. Of course, as you mentioned, Instagram is our new form of social media. You can find us there also at the Ultimate Fight Show. Twitter's a little different, but it's also easy at the Alt Fight Show.
Yeah. You know, again, that event in Cleveland, fantastic. We're going to get to that, but well, you know what, let's get to that now, and then we'll do the rankings for the September rankings that just came out. We'll do all that afterwards, because what happened over the weekend is obviously going to affect the rankings from August. So, again, UFC 203, fantastic event, Cleveland, Ohio. I was there, live, Brag. I'll tell you, it was electric. Let's start off with what we had. It was a big card, a little bit of confusion and then some cancellations as apparently there was an elevator at one of the hotels that the fighters were staying at that malfunctioned. C.B. Dolloway went to open it up, cut his hand or injured his hand, had to cancel that fight. And then Uncle Creepy was supposed to fight Borg, and Borg came down with the stomach virus, so they had to cancel that fight. So right off the bat, two of the fights of the 12 got canceled, but we still had 10 good fights. Bragg, tell us a little bit about how weird you thought that was, that this incident went down before the fights even happened and the cancellations.
Yeah, the incidents with Ian McCall's opponent, you know, people get sick, things like that. But, man, C.B. Dolloway, I mean, that really could have been a serious, serious situation. You know, thankfully he came out of it relatively unscathed, of course. Had a little bit of an injury, but it could have been much, much worse. Just a freaky, freaky incident to happen. You know, that's all I can say, man. Just watch out for elevators, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. Death traps. So we grouped together four of those undercard fights, and we both took Lentz, Dauber, Tavares, and Spencer. We went 3-1 as Lentz, Dauber, and Tavares all got wins. Spencer with the loss there. So now let's get to the six main fights. We'll start with Jessica I against Beth Coria. Bragg liked Jessica I. You know how I feel I think she's overrated. As I said on the show, she had a 1-4-1 record coming in. And it was a good fight. I will say this. Her entrance and the crowd supporting her made me kind of want to root for her while the fight was going on. But then once the cage closed, I felt like the first round was hers. The second round was close, but I gave it to Coria. Third round I gave to Coria. In the end, Beth Coria got a split decision win. I was surprised considering that we were in Jessica Eye's backyard. But, Bragg, how did you feel about that? Did the judges get it right?
I think they did. I think it was a good fight. It was a close fight. It really could have went either way, but I'm not going to argue with the decision, even though I did pick Eye to win. Is she overrated? Like you say, you know, she's lost to some really good opponents. She's never going to be one of those elite fighters, but she's also always going to be a serviceable opponent for someone, and she's never going to be really a pushover. But great fight by both girls. I'm not going to argue with the decision, though.
Yeah, I'm in the impression, and I think I said it on Twitter afterwards, I think she's going to be cut from the UFC. 1-5-1 in your last 7 fights. There's no reason. There's other girls who deserve an opportunity to get on the roster. So, all right, Bragg, tell us a little bit about the California kid taking on Rivera and how that went down.
Well, as I did, I picked Rivera to win that fight. It was a good fight back and forth. I thought the decision was unanimous. Faber stayed in there, but Rivera's kicks were too much. He was just too active, too quick. Uriah Faber, as much as I love watching him fight, he's beginning to show his age a little bit. He's had his chance. I don't think he'll get another title shot unless something crazy happens, last-minute injury fill-in, whatever the case may be. But as I said, this could have been like a passing of the torch moment. I'm not sure if Rivera's the guy that's going to really run with that torch, but at this point I think Uriah Faber is on the downside.
Absolutely. Jessica Andrade against Joanne Calderwood. You had Calderwood, I had Andrade, and it was this was a really good fight. It kicked off the pay-per-view. Andrade went right at her, not known for being a striker, and she was able to hit her a couple times and then set up that nice takedown, get on top of her, and eventually choke her out. I thought it was a fabulous first-round submission performance by Andrade, who has now climbed herself into the ranks at 115 pounds. Bragg, what's next for Calderwood? Do you think that she just, the moment maybe got to her? Do you think that this is kind of one of those moments where maybe she was a little overrated coming in?
It's tough to say she's overrated because we haven't seen that much of her, and I think she's still got a lot to show. I think she could have been, as you said, Andrade came out very quick. Very aggressive. I think that may have caught Calderwood off guard a little bit. Good fight, though. I really think Andrade may have, like I said, caught her off guard, was able to get to her a little quicker, and she got the submission victory, and a damn good job by her.
All right, the next fight, I can't even talk about it because I'm so annoyed. So I'm not even going to say his name. So just go ahead and tell the fans and break that fiasco down.
Well, I was very high on CM Punk going into the fight. I really, really thought that he was better than what it had showed. I had a lot of faith in him. Maybe that was the fanboy in me. Maybe that was me being a mark for CM Punk. I'm not the one that told you to go lay down some green on him, though. So don't blame me there. But Mickey Gall, again, very aggressive. Took him down just right off the bat and immediately showed. Well, let me back up for a second. I'm not as disappointed in CM Punk as I am impressed with Mickey Gall. We knew he had some talent, but he really came out very aggressive. showed some skill on the mat. CM Punk, I think, did a good job for a while defending the submissions and holding his own for a while. He got beat up, I mean, but give him credit for his first fight. He didn't panic. He didn't go into – he didn't get a chance to get the octagon jitters, which is what I was worried about last week. Gall came in, took him down right away, and immediately went to work with some ground-and-pound submission attempts. Punk was able to defend and fight off of the first couple of choke attempts, but a little over 2 minutes left in the round, Gall was able to stick a rear naked choke in, and Punk had no choice but to tap out. Again, Mickey Gall impressed me more than CM Punk disappointed me. Gall called out Sage Northcutt after the fight. I thought that was very entertaining. That was a pretty awesome move by him. Hey, Mickey Gall is playing the game now. He's got a taste of the UFC, and hey, this kid's somebody to watch. How far he's going to go, who knows? CM Punk's next step, he says he wants to fight. He says he wants to get another fight. Dana White's unsure if he'll get that fight in the UFC. But, you know, Punk is a guy. How much more is he going to improve at 38 years old? I don't know. But he said he had a lot of fun. Respect the guy for going out there and giving him a shot, taking his ass kicking like a man. And, you know, who knows? But, yeah, Mickey Gall, to me, was the most more impressive out of that than anything else.
I originally picked Gall on the air. Yes, the more I thought about it, I was swayed. It usually doesn't happen, but I just thought it was amateur hour. I mean, this dude, the way he even went at Mickey Gall bothered me. I mean, you know, as a former amateur boxer, you know that you're not just going to go and wind up. It looked like CM Punk just ran at him and then had his fist cocked, and Mickey Gall just went fake up top and just scoop slammed him. I mean, you can't do that against a brown belt Brazilian jiu-jitsu fighter like Mickey Gall. And as soon as he came out to, "Hey, Mickey, you're so fine," I knew I was going to lose the bet. Like, not even knew I was going to lose. Although CM Punk's entrance was pretty cool. That fight was all hype until the bell sounded. And then I loved how Mickey Gall said, "What did you expect was going to happen? I do this shit full time." Very impressed with Mickey Gall. Love to see him fight Sage Northcutt. I would favor Mickey Gall against Sage Northcutt between you and I. However, CM Punk, the fact that it was later revealed that he made $500,000 for that, when you got guys making 10 and 15 grand trying to grind it out, and this dude gets on a major pay-per-view card as the third fight and doesn't even get to throw a punch. I never want to see CM Punk in the ring again. It's hilarious. My gambling book gave me my $1,000 back because of how embarrassing the fight was. I'm serious.
Well, let me
ask
you a question. Do you remember, and I didn't look this up beforehand, but how much did James Toney get paid for his fight against Randy Couture?
I want to say, because he got a percentage of the pay-per-view for that event, I'm going to say somewhere in the neighborhood of $500,000 to $1 million.
Okay. And now, albeit, it's a little different because James Toney had proven in the combat sports
world.
Yeah,
he was a world champion. He's a Hall of Famer. Yeah.
Absolutely. But and you touched it. You said it right there, the pay-per-view numbers. As big of a fight as the heavyweight championship of the world was that night, the biggest draw of that card was CM Punk versus Mickey Gall. Make no mistake about it. And you had a great card there. But the biggest numbers of pay-per-view buys that came on Saturday night were going to be from the wrestling fans, are going to be from the casual fans who – or even the UFC fans who don't necessarily buy every pay-per-view, They bought that
even the straight edges.
Watch. Well, there you go. You know, Punk has its own
I will say this, Greg. I'm sorry to interject, but I'll say this: as the from someone who was at the event, there was a lot. The crowd was very pro Mickey Gall. I mean pro CM Punk. However, once they saw Mickey Gall take him to the ground and get on top of him, they instantly went away from CM Punk. And then afterwards, when he started getting a little preachy with his message and stuff, people were booing him. So,
wow.
I don't know.
I didn't hear that.
Yeah, it was just, they didn't show that at the pay-per-view, you know. But I just think that we've spent too much time on it. Let's move on. So, co-main event, Fabricio Werdum, Travis Brown, the rematch of a pretty good fight the first time. So I could see where on paper this was booked, the quick turnaround for Brown. You know, he's got vinegar and salt in his piss because of what happened to him against King. You got Werdum looking to get back, you know, the championship that he just lost the fight before. Greg, this fight, the best part about this fight was the opening kick that Fabricio came out with. After that, it just looked to me like Brown didn't want to fight. He gassed, then Fabricio gassed. And, you know, he won an easy unanimous decision when both of us, and I think the majority of the MMA community, was expecting one of them to knock the other one out because that's what heavyweights are supposed to do, especially with 4-ounce gloves on. Bragg, what's your take?
Well, I think maybe that bad initial drop kick was maybe his tribute to CM Punk, maybe. I don't know in the pro wrestling world. But, yeah, this was our lock of the night. We both of us thought that Fabricio Werdum would just run through Travis Brown. I wouldn't say he ran through him, but it was a pretty Travis Brown got some shots in, but Werdum pretty much dominated the fight. It was a unanimous decision again. Neither of us thought it was going to go to distance. But it did, and Werdum puts himself in line for a rematch with Stipe Miocic, which is exactly what he needed to do with this fight.
Absolutely. And now let's get to the main event. Stipe Miocic, Alistair Overeem. Again, we both thought Miocic would win this fight, but we knew it was going to be difficult. We knew that he was fighting a game Alistair Overeem. I put some pictures up on social media. A friend of mine ran into the ring at the casino the night before looking huge, said he was ready to fight. Excuse me. And I was 51-49. In the end, I ended up taking Miocic with a bet, and I'm really glad that I did. You know, Cleveland Pride, the fight was huge. I'll tell you that the entrance for both of them, the atmosphere, when Stipe was coming down, you know, the walk of the champ, he had the belt ready to go. I was pretty proud to be a Clevelander, and we don't get to say that often. Now, as far as the fight, it lived up to what I thought heavyweight should do. You know, they both came out there throwing their jabs. There wasn't really much of a feeling out process, as you know, that Stipe's pretty aggressive, and so is the ring. The ring got in a nice little knee to the body. Stipe hit him with a 1-2. And then all of a sudden, about a minute and a half into the fight, Ream switched up because Ream was coming in the southpaw stance. He just threw in boxing what we call lead left. So instead of throwing the jab and then the cross, he just threw his power hand as a jab, which you got to be fast. Ali used to do it all the time. You got to be fast or you got to have a long action for that to work. And he caught Stipe off guard and dropped him. Boom, jumped on top of him, people grabbing my shoulders because they thought the fight was going to be over. And I just brushed him away because from what I saw, and correct me because maybe you had a different view at home watching it on TV, listening to Rogan and them. But to me, Greg, it looked like Overeem was a little high on the guillotine, like he got it on the chin. He didn't really get it under Stipe's chin. So I knew he was going to get out of it. They get back up to the feet, and then for the next 2 minutes, Stipe just stalked him, must have thrown 50 punches, eventually got him down, and then switched it up with a 6-inch punch, boom, and you saw the lights go out, he jumps up. Never heard an arena that loud. We'll have the video up on Facebook later in the week, Bragg, and still champion of the world from C-Town, Stipe Miocic. What was your take at home?
Well, of course, you were there. You got to see it live. That was just an incredible thing to see. I would have loved to have been there. Yeah, I held my breath for a second. When he threw that punch and knocked Miocic down, I mean, literally, it was he went down. He immediately grabbed the guillotine. He never really got it locked in. It was there was some controversy after the fight. Overeem thought he felt him tap. He supposedly at that point let up a little bit, and that's how Miocic got out. Miocic never taps, first and foremost. I can see where Reem may have thought so, because there was a couple times he grabbed at his arm, so he could have felt like that was a tap there, but really there's no excuse. That's why fighters are trained to go until the referee pulls them off. But no, I don't think Miocic was really ever in dire trouble there. But again, once he got up and got out, it looked like it was only a matter of time at that point. I think you used the term, he stalked him, and that was a great way to put it. Got him down and got him out with some vicious, vicious ground and pound. You said you've never heard an arena erupt so loud when he got the win there. I don't think the television pop that the crowd gave did it justice. Just an absolute fantastic performance by Stipe Miocic, who found himself in some trouble, got out of it, and came back and just dominated the fight. Great job by Miocic. Just an absolute fantastic performance. To cap off what was a really good show.
Yeah, it's just indicative of how Cleveland people are. You know, you get them down and then they get back up. And look at LeBron and the Cavs, down 2-0, and then you kick the champs in the teeth for 4 out of 5 games. Miocic has shown now, Bragg, I'm just going to go through this list real quick. You got Junior Dos Santos, Roy Nelson, Fabricio Verdum, Alistair Overeem. These are all serious punchers. And this dude has shown that he's got a beard. He's got a beard. He might not have the legs. Again, anybody who puts on gloves like that and weighs over 200 and is trained can knock anybody out. The fact that he took a huge punch from arguably the best well-rounded striker in MMA, the K-1 champion, the Strikeforce champion, et cetera, shows a lot. And he said afterwards to the crowd, he goes, "I'm not giving this belt up for a while." We're gonna talk about that in a second, but look, you're right. The level of noise was deafening. I mean, legitimately, I could not hear. It was like one of those moments where the only thing I can think of is how people have described when a bomb goes off and you can see things moving and happening, but you can't hear anything. That's how it sounded. And when we put the video up, you listeners at home will be able to understand what I'm talking about. Overall, how would you rank the event? What grade do you give it?
I'm giving it a solid B+. I think, like I said, I don't think outside of the CM Punk Mickey Gall fight, I don't believe there wasn't really any stinkers on the show. I think it was a good solid show. Felt like I got my money's worth out of it, and I'm going B+.
I'm going to go B-. B- for if you were at home watching it. If you're there, it was an A. But I thought going in, and I expressed my concerns last week, I thought the card was kind of weak on paper. Now, the fights ended up living up, but Miocic doesn't win. I think that card is mediocre. The way Miocic got up and won made that fight, made that card, in my opinion. Now, Bragg, we're going to do a new segment on this show before we get into the rankings. Another thing, it just what's next. So we're gonna take the winners and just try to come up with who we think they should fight next. I'll go first. Let's start with Rivera. You're going to see when we get to the rankings very shortly that he jumped. He was ranked number 10, and he's going to be ranked number, I believe, yeah, he's going to be ranked number 5 in the new rankings. What would you like to see next for Jimmy Rivera moving forward?
That's an interesting conundrum there. Rafael Sanzal is right there in front of him. I think we got him at number 4. John Dobson, who has moved back up to bantamweight, would be a really good fight for him. You know, Rivera's hot right now. He's one of those guys that on short notice, he could step in. I think Cruz has a who does he have coming up? Is it a Sunsaw?
Yeah. Well, there was talk that Cruz was going to engage in a super fight with Demetrius Johnson, but now that he's doing the Ultimate Fighter thing, they're trying to find an opponent. I've heard that it might be a Sunsaw. I've heard possibly that it could be Brian Caraway, who's coming off of a couple big wins, or Fernandez. Who knows?
Yeah, Rivera's one of those guys. He's an up-and-comer. In that division, he's one win away. I wouldn't mind seeing him fight T.J. Dillashaw. I think that would be a really good fight, a really good step-up and test for him. I think a win against any of the three in front of him puts him in line for a title shot. So I would, or as you mentioned, our friend Brian Caraway, if he were to step up and take a fight with Rivera, that would be a pretty good fight. I think the winner of that would get be in line as well.
Absolutely. I think Johnny Dotson or Dillashaw. All right, moving on. Let's go to Jessica Andrade. She's going to be ranked number 4 at strawweight in the September rankings. For me, you already got Joanna and Kowalski, Carolina. They're both undefeated. They're signed to fight Madison Square Garden, UFC 205. So that's, you know, you because many people are talking about that Jessica Andrade maybe should get a title shot. I'd like to see her fight Claudia Gadelha, who just lost to Joanna, who both of her losses are to her. That's my opinion moving forward. Bragg, who do you think?
No, I think that would be a pretty good fight for her. I think that is actually the top fight for her. I think that a fight there would put her in line for a title shot. So I think that's going to be her
Absolutely.
Next fight.
Yeah, I could maybe see a lot. I could see her and Paige Van Zandt, though, having a really fun fight. And if the UFC wants to capitalize, because you know that Paige Van Zandt, she's very cute, she's personable, she was on Dancing with the Stars. The UFC's trying to get her to the point where her and Joanna could meet and fight maybe in a year or two. So if they want to jump that process and throw her in there with Jessica, I could see that happening as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That would be another fight, too. I know a lot of fighters who are coming off big wins, like Andrade is, don't like to look back. And I know Paige Van Zandt's ranked below her at the moment, but it would be a high-profile fight for her as well. So that could be an appeal.
We already talked about Mickey Gall and Sage Northcutt. That should be the fight for them. So let's go to Beth Correa, who got the split decision in a, you know, we said it was a must-win fight for both girls. We still don't have Correa cracking the top 10 of the women's bantamweight division rankings, but moving forward, I'd like to see her fight anybody 7 through 10. I could see her fighting Sarah McMahon, Alexis Davis, Kat Zingano. Actually, her and Kat Zingano, both Brazilian, that could be a really good fight.
I think Zingano, that was the fight I was looking at. I think that was the name I really would like to see her fight. I think Holly Holm would be another one, too, that it would be a nice little rebound for Holm if she could get the win. And if Correa could beat Holly Holm, it would really move her up in the rankings as well. And I think Zingano is the most logical choice there.
Yeah, Holly Holm, that was a good that's why you're on the show here with those kind of comments. Let's get to the heavyweights here. Fabricio Werdum, he's ranked number two behind Stipe. That, you know, his only loss is to the champ. He's 21-6 with one draw. What's next for him? You know that he wants a title shot. I personally don't think that Werdum, with that performance, warrants fighting Stipe so quick, which brings us to the next thing. Does Werdum have his fight against Ben Rothwell, which was originally scheduled for the show, or does he get Junior Dos Santos? And you remember Dos Santos is the guy that sent Werdum packing from the UFC to go revitalize his career in Strikeforce. So there's a lot of options, but for me, I mean, you could even have the fight against King in a rematch and then the winner gets Stipe. I just don't think that Werdum and Stipe need to fight again this quickly. So I'd like to see him fight Rothwell or Dos Santos. Who do you got?
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't think, as much as a fan of Junior Dos Santos as I am, I don't think he would match up well with Miocic at this point.
Cain Velasquez, we're talking about Werdum.
Oh, for Werdum. You're right. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I got to step ahead. I was reading some other notes. I got to step ahead. Really, who else is Miocic going to fight? Unless Cain Velasquez is healthy, which never seems to be an option, I don't see Josh Barnett's on a little winning streak. I don't think he's worthy of a title shot at this point. I don't know, man. I think Werdum is really – I think a rematch is the next logical point. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I hear what you're saying. I'm going to go in another direction. I'm going to say that for Stipe, I think that he wants to hold onto this belt for a while. Now, he's fought twice since May. I think personally he's going to take a little time off. I could maybe see him fighting – at the end of the year or maybe early 2017. And I think it's going to be against Cain Velasquez. I think that that's the super fight now that has to be made in the heavyweight division. You got Cain, who when he's healthy is the only heavyweight that has a better gas tank than Stipe. Stipe, we know he's got a good chin. Cain's been knocked out before by Dos Santos. It can happen. I think that that's the fight that we really need to see to know who is the best heavyweight in the world. And I think that's next. I would also be okay with Cain and Werdum fighting again and then the winner fighting Stipe later in the next year. We'll see what happens. But either way, the sky's the limit right now for Stipe Miocic, the heavyweight champion of the world.
I also read an article teasing that a man by the name of John Jones, it would be interesting coming up and fighting Stipe Miocic as well. What do you think of that?
I was going to throw that in my response, but to me, I don't think Jones is – I think that's just talk. I don't think that Jones is really serious yet. He knows that he's the best fighter in the world, pound for pound. He also knows, much like Mayweather, that he's undefeated. Even though he's got one loss, we all know he didn't lose to Hamill. He just hit him with an elbow that was illegal then, but now is okay. So he's undefeated. I don't think he would go right from being light heavyweight champion to the top of the mountain without at least seeing how the power is at heavyweight to see how his chin would do, which I suspect it would do fine. But I don't really buy into those rumors.
Let's just playing devil's advocate real quick, just speeding on this for just a moment. Is that a risk, if you're the UFC, is that a risk you would want to take with John Jones, knowing his history? Is that a risk you'd want to take with him going up and fighting a top 10 heavyweight, for example, and getting knocked out, getting embarrassed before you cash in on a big super fight with the heavyweight champion?
Yeah, I mean, it's MMA. It's always risk-reward. Anything can happen. You could sign the best fight ever, and then both fighters could get injured before anything even happens, and you got to move into the B team. I just think that with John Jones, he is the best fighter in the world, in my opinion, pound for pound. I don't think that he needs to do it yet. He's 27. Stipe's 34, going to be 35. He's got a couple of years left. You can let that marinate for a little while, I think. But let's do these rankings here real quick for the September, just for the listeners. I'll start with the heavyweight, as we said, Stipe Miocic, heavyweight champion of the world. Fabricio Werdum, number 2. Velasquez, 3. Dos Santos, 4. Ben Rothwell, 5. I'd like to still see him fight Werdum. Overeem drops to 6. Josh Barnett is the brag man alludes to on a nice little win streak. Great win over Arlovski. He trades places with him. 7. Vitaly Minnikov, undefeated, 18-0. Not a lot on him yet, but ranked number 8. He's a name to watch. Arlovski drops to 9. Travis Brown drops to 10. Bragg, take us through the light heavyweights.
Of course, the number 1 light heavyweight in the world is Mr. DC Daniel Cormier. Number 2 is Anthony Johnson. I'm looking forward to seeing them fight. I really wish, talking about John Jones earlier, I'd like to see him come back. I'd like to see Anthony Johnson knock him out personally, but that's just my opinion. Number 3 is Alexander Gustafsson at 16-4. Number 4, a man who just will not go away, Mr. Ryan
Darth
Bader. 20-5. It's hard to believe. Would you have thought in 2016 that Ryan Bader would still be a top 5 light heavyweight?
I wouldn't even have thought that he would be in the organization.
Number 5 is Glover Teixeira. Number 6 is Mr. Wonderful Phil Davis, Eggenson Noyes, and Bellator. Number 7, Liam McGreary at 11-0, a nice up-and-comer to keep an eye on. OSP, Ovin St. Preux at number 8. Quentin Rampage Jackson, another guy who I've never thought I'd be talking about in 2016. Number 9, and then King Mo Lawal at number 10.
All right, the middleweights. We got the Count, Michael Bisping, the champion of the world. It's so weird saying that. 29-7. Number 2, the man he took the strap from, Luke Rockhold. 3, we got Chris Weidman. 4, is a tie between Jacare Souza and Joel Romero. Now, I know Romero beat Souza by split decision, close fight, but then he tested positive and the fight was ruled to a no contest. So until they settle that, they're tied at 4. 6th is Vitor Belfort. 7, Gegard Mousasi. 8, the Spider, Anderson Silva. Number 9, up-and-comer Robert Whittaker. And number 10, Fielis Leitis, 26-6. Bragg, take us through the welterweights.
The new welterweight champion is Mr. Tyron Woodley. The number 2 fight welterweight in the world, Mr. Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. I'm looking forward to seeing that fight. Number 3 is Robbie Lawler. Number 4, Damian Maya. Number 5 is Ben Askren. Number 6 is Roy McDonald. Number 7, the natural born killer, Carlos Condit. Number 8, Andrei Koreshkov at 19-1. He's the man to look out for. Number 9, Neil Magny. And number 10, Kelvin Gastelum, who has got some news on him. He will be fighting Cowboy Cerrone on the Madison Square Garden show coming up in November.
Yeah, it was a shame that Lawler had to pull out of that with an injury. Let's go to the lightweights now. We got new champion Eddie Alvarez, 28-4. Khabib I always have trouble saying this dude's name. He's like the only fighter that gets me Nurmagomedov. Let's just call him Khabib. 23-0. He's ranked number 2. He's a guy that beat Rafael Dos Anjos, who's number 3 on our list, and who we would like to see get a title shot. Number 4 is Nate Diaz, who I think don't be surprised if Nate Diaz is in the mix for a title shot here in the next fight. Number 5, Tony Ferguson. Number 6, we got Cowboy Cerrone on the lightweight list, but he's also on – do we have him on the – we do not have him on the welterweight list, so because we're not sure still if he's ever going to drop down. By the next rankings, we'll have that decided one way or the other. Number 7, Edson Barboza. Number 8, Will Brooks. 9, Benson Henderson. And 10, the man that fights this weekend, Dustin Poirier, 20-4. Bragg, featherweights?
Yeah, of course, the number 1 featherweight in the world is Conor McGregor. Let's see him get an octagon and defend that title. That's the only thing I ask for out of McGregor. Number 2 is the interim UFC champion, Jose Aldo, the man he beat at Frankie Edgar's. At number 3, Max Holloway, who is a guy who really deserves a title shot. He needs to get that next year. He's sitting at number 4. Anthony Pettis, a man who really, really surprised me when he went down to featherweight. He looked really good. He may be reinvigorating his career there at featherweight. He sits at number 5. Chad Mendez, always dangerous, at number 6. Daniel Strauss at number 7. Cub Swanson, a guy who will scrap with anybody, at number 8. The Pitbull, Patricio Freire, over in Bellator, is 25-3, and he's at number 9. And Miles Jury cracks the top 10 at 15-2. We've already talked about the bantamweights a little bit, but take us through the top 10 there.
Yeah, I just wanted to say something about the Max Holloway, Anthony Pettis. We touched on it last week that they are rumored to be fighting each other very soon. I did see Anthony Pettis at the UFC event, pictures of him. We'll put him up on the website, but he was there as an ambassador. He was also at a meet and greet, same with Cowboy Cerrone. I saw the Hammer, Mark Coleman, at 1 a.m, wasted, getting an autograph, walking down the street. Like, I mean, that dude's huge. But what I was going to say about Holloway Pettis, if they do fight, the winner of that fight will get a title shot against McGregor, in my opinion. And on a side note, Anthony Pettis, I don't know if it was his girlfriend or his fiance or his wife, but he had the best looking woman in the entire arena with him. It was ridiculous. He's being comforted.
Only because your better half didn't make it, right?
Well, of course. But, you know, this was, I was just like, whoa. Everyone else in the arena was, too. They put her on the screen a couple times. And I will say this as well. A lot, and I told my wife this when I got home, a lot more credit to the ring girls, like Ariana Celeste and those girls. When you're there live in person, those outfits that they make them wear are way skimpier than you think they are on television. And those girls have to be in serious shape to pull off what they did, and they pulled it off great. So, you know, I usually make fun of the ring girls because their job is to walk around with a big sign and hold up a number. But you got to be in pretty good shape, and you got to have nerves of steel to walk around in that outfit in front of 20,000 strangers. So we'll give them a little props. But let's get the bantamweights real quick. We got the champ, Dominic Cruz, TJ Dillashaw at 2. Dawson 3, Anuncio 4, Rivera 5, big jump, Villabona Fernandez at 6, the California Kid falls to 7, Brian Caraway moves up to 8, Lineker is at 9, and Morose is at 10. Bragg, the flyweights.
The flyweights are topped, of course, by, to me, the number 1 pound-for-pound fighter in the world, Mr. Demetrius Johnson. Number 2, just still up there, is Joseph Benavidez. Number 3 is Henry Kyoto. Number 4, Kyoji Horiguchi. Yeah. Number 5, who, as we mentioned, was pulled due to his opponent's illness, was in McCall. And number 6 is Josier Da Silva.
Yeah, and I mean, don't forget, we didn't promote it last week because there were so many things to get going with the impromptu show to get before UFC 203, but How good is Tough this year, Bragg? I mean, you know me. I hate Tough. I probably haven't watched it since Forrest Griffin and Bonner got the UFC back on the map. But this season, I love the concept. Champions versus champions. Belts on the line. You take the other guy's strap. And Cueto and Benavidez, who are 2-3 and have both lost to Johnson, are the coaches. And then the winner gets a shot at Mighty Mouse. Great concept. The show's on tonight at 10. Don't miss it. Brad, your thoughts on it?
Yeah, it's a very interesting concept. I was curious to see how that would go, how that would play out. Cause like you said, Benavidez and Cueto have both recently lost to Demetrius Johnson. Johnson has essentially wiped out his division. They had to come up with somebody for him to fight. Great concept. You got guys who may not be on the level of the UFC pros, you know, the top five, top ten flyweights, but these guys are champions in their own right. Great concept, great fight, just an absolute fantastic season so far. I'm really looking forward to seeing how this turns out. Demetrius Johnson's not going to lose his title to any of these guys. Let's just say that right now, but it's going to be a hell of a ride getting there.
Yeah. All right, Brad, take us through the women's bantamweight.
A division we thought was cleaned out a year ago has really stacked up since Ronda Rousey lost to Holly Holm back in November. But the number one girl in the world at what bantamweight is, of course, Amanda Nunes. Number two, we still got Chris Cyborg, rather. No Santos any longer. Is she going to be able to get down to 135 consistently? I don't know. I wish she could. If not, let's start paying some girls to go up and fight her. She's tearing up Invicta right now, but she really needs to be in the UFC. She may be the best overall fighter not in the UFC right now, male or female. Number three is Ronda Rousey. When will she be back? Who knows? Number four is our girl Miesha Tate. Number five, Juliana Pena. Number six is probably the breakout fighter of the year for the females, is Val Shevchenko. Absolute fantastic fighter. I look forward to seeing her move on up the rankings. Number seven, the former champ Holly Holm. Number eight, former number one contender Kat Zingano. Number nine, former Olympic wrestler Sarah McMahon. Number 10 is Alexis Davis.
Absolutely. Just a little side note on Christine Cyborg. She's going to be fighting on UFC Fight Night 95 against Lena Landsberg, and that's going to be in Brazil September 24th. So next weekend, she will be fighting in the UFC for the first time. The last time she fought, that was like a cross-promotion thing at 140. This fight will be at 140 again. So we'll see what happens. I think that they're gonna get her in there at 35 somehow, because she's just too big of a name now, and she's just been destroying girls. All right, and let's get through the 115 pounders. Of course, we have the champion of the world, Joanna Jędrzejczak, 12-0. She'll be fighting Carolina Kowalski at Madison Square Garden. She's 10-0. Should be a great fight. Claudia Gadelha is 3, Jessica Andrade 4, Carla Esparza 5, Jessica Angular, Ticia Torres at 7, Paige Van Zandt jumps into the rankings at 8 following the Miyagi kick, and number 9, Joanna Calderwood, and at 10, Valerie Latoru. Now, finishing this up, let's get to the pound for pounds. Bragg, I'm going to take us through the notables. We got Nate Diaz, Robbie Lawler, Joseph Benavidez, who we talked about as a coach, Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, and the count, Michael Bisping at 11. Bragg, take us 10 through 6.
At number 10, the welterweight champion of the world, Mr. Tyrone Woodley. Number 9, the old man of the featherweight division, you've got Frankie Edgar. Number 8, TJ Dillashaw. Number 7, the baddest man on the planet, the heavyweight champion of the world, Stipe Miocic. And number 6, the man I eagerly anticipate seeing a rematch with Conor McGregor, Mr. Jose Aldo.
Number 5 is the lightweight champion of the world, Eddie Alvarez. Number 4, DC, Daniel Cormier, the light heavyweight champion of the world. Number 3, featherweight champion of the world and newly signed to play. He's playing a major role in Call of Duty. I saw some of the stuff on Instagram. Conor McGregor, number two, Dominic Cruz, and number one, Mighty Mouse Demetrius Johnson, at least while John Jones is sidelined. You can catch those rankings and see them up on our social media. Bragg, let's pivot here and do a little sweet science. All right, we had the boxing weekend. Couple big fights that we covered. Let's start with some of the fights that we had. We had Castlemayor defending his title. He won. Trubisky won. Easter, really good fight. Split decision won. And Haskins won. So we were 4-0. Then we got to the main fight. So we had Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez stepping up in class for the first time in his career to fight Carlos Quadros, who was undefeated, 118-pound champ. This was a great fight, Bragg. I don't know if you saw it, but just a really, really good fight. Gonzalez got started off at a super fast pace. I've never seen him fight at this pace. And, you know, won the first couple rounds, and then Quadros came back, busted up Tito's eyes. They were both swollen, both cut. Chocolatito comes back in the middle rounds and busts up Quadros' nose. Just a really great fight. And in the end, the judges had a unanimous decision for Roman Gonzalez. The scores varied. One judge had it 117-111, another 116-112, and another 115-113. I scored it 116-112, 8-4 for Chocolatito. But I could have seen it going either way on the score with the other scores. Bragg, what did you think of the fight if you saw it? And what's next now for Chocolatito?
Yeah, I saw the results. I read the results before I actually got to see the highlights. I haven't actually seen the entire fight yet, but sort of disappointed because I would have loved to have seen that back-and-forth war with those two guys. Just a fantastic performance, and just Chocolatito proving why he's our number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world, getting a little bit of adversity and coming back and winning the fight.
Absolutely. Daniel Jacobs was taking on Sergio Mora, and we both thought that Daniel Jacobs would win. That's pretty much what happened. Mora went out there, did his usual contender, pit-pat, I'm going to do this, I'm going to show you the southpaw stance, the orthodox stance. In the end, it amounts to really, he's a really good showman, but there's not much fight or bark behind those punches, and Daniel Jacobs eventually knocked him down a few times and got him out of there in the sixth round. Bragg, there's been rumors that Daniel Jacobs could be fighting the winner of Canelo and Smith, who we're going to cover later, or the winner of Triple G and Cal Brook that we're going to tell the fans what happened next. But Jacobs, middleweight champion, looking good.
Yeah, absolutely. I think either of those two fights that he takes next are really going to get him, set him up there in the mainstream eyes, and it could be a really, really, really interesting next 6 or 8 months for Mr. Daniel Jacobs.
For sure. Now the main event, Triple G, Gennady Gennadonovich Globotchkin, undefeated, taking on Cal Special K Brooks, undefeated, moving up two weight classes. We talked about it. He's fighting in London in the O2 Arena in front of his home crowd. Just a really good event. We thought it was going to be going in Cal Brooks 7-8-1 underdog, but we said he was live. We both thought Triple G would win by decision. We were wrong. I mean, this was a weird fight, Bragg. I don't know if you saw the highlights or if you actually saw the whole fight, but I'm going to break it down for the fans. Basically, they come out there. Triple G just comes out headhunting, easily wins the first round, buckles Cal Brooks' knees. It wasn't looking good. But then the second round, Cal Brooks comes back, boxes beautifully. He staggers G as well with the shot, but we found out later it was more of an off-balance situation. But then early third round, Triple G lands a punch and then a headbutt by accident. A hematoma developed over Cal Brooks' face. He wasn't the same, but he hung in there. And in the fifth round, about halfway through the fifth round, his corner threw in the towel, not wanting him to succumb to any of the punches. I was watching the fight with a buddy. We both thought it was weird. I thought it was 3-2 at that point. I thought Brooke was live. I didn't think he was going to win. Obviously, his corner wanted to preserve him. And in hindsight, Triple G said after the fight that he didn't feel any of his punches and that he was going to knock him out. It didn't matter if it was that round or in a round or two that the fight was over. Bragg, first tell me what you think about Kell Brook and his courage stepping up, and then let's talk about the monster that's Triple G.
Yeah, Kell Brook, we talked about it last week. He took a big step up in not only competition, but in weight classes. He moved up 2 weight classes. We were interested to see how that would affect him. Much respect for the man. He came in there. He came to fight. It would have been interesting to see what would have happened if he wouldn't have got caught with the headbutt, with the hematoma. I would have liked to have seen how that played out. Of course, the biggest word in the dictionary is if. If he wouldn't have got the hematoma, if he wouldn't have done this, wouldn't have done that, Triple G was going to win that fight. We both predicted it to happen. He did happen. I will never fault a guy's corner for throwing in the towel and saving a fighter, because the fighter's not going to give up. The fighter's not going to save themselves. Very admirable performance by Kell Brook. I think he's got a lot of potential in the sport. I think he's a guy who's going to be making a lot of noise. He's going to be around for a long time. But it was Triple G's night, one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the world, one of my favorite guys to watch. I mean, Brook just ran into a buzzsaw, and he was unable to get away.
Yeah. And your thoughts on Triple G?
Oh, just once again, going in there and taking care of business. A fight we thought he should win, you know, caught a little off balance or not. When you still get caught with a shot and you go down, I would think it still plays with your mind a little bit. It didn't affect him. He came back, headbutt or not, he was pulling away in that fight. Another solid performance by him. And again, if he fights Daniel Jacobs next, I think that would be a great, great fight. And I would look forward to that.
And
I think that's the fight that could happen.
Yeah, that is the fight that's probably going to happen. I suspect that Daniel Jacobs and Triple G will fight before the end of the year. Canelo fights this weekend. We'll talk about that. But if Canelo wins, which he's supposed to win, I think Canelo fights again before the end of the year as well. And then hopefully maybe in May, those two, their camps will cross roads eventually. But Triple G, 23 knockouts in a row. You can't really fault the dude. He's a destroyer. This guy's serious as a heart attack. And if Floyd Mayweather was ringside watching that fight, again, I can see where Max Kellerman, you know, and people who think Triple G will beat Mayweather, I can see why they think that. Triple G, of course, after the fight, said that he still thinks that he can make 155 pounds to fight Mayweather if he's so inclined. And with that swarming, those body shots, the stamina, I can see where people would say that Mayweather's defense isn't going to do anything because he's still going to just be getting hit with bombs on the arms, body, whatever. But everyone, you know, said that before. And, you know, I tend to think that I think Floyd, if he decides to fight Triple G, he'll have a game plan for him. He'll be ready. And again, everybody that's ever fought Floyd has said the same thing. When you get in the ring with him, he's faster than you think from watching tape, and he hits harder than you think he does. And if that fight happens, it's the biggest fight in boxing that could be made. I think Triple G Floyd in a year is bigger than Pacquiao Mayweather. That's my opinion on it. Whether or not
it very well could be if Triple G wins one more fight, possibly against Jacobs, Or if he beats Jacobs and then fights Canelo and is able to beat him, absolutely. I can see Triple G and Mayweather being a huge sell for the world of boxing.
Oh, yeah. All right, let's do the pound-for-pound list. We got Mikey Garcia at 15, is Randy Lara at 14, Danny Garcia 13, Adonis Stevenson at 12, Tim Bradley at 11, or I mean, he's at 12. I'm sorry, we went one back. And Kell Brook drops from the tide for 10. Now he's 11. We're not going to fault him for moving up two weight classes to take on a guy that's the most feared man in boxing. So, Bragg, take us 10 through 6.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Number 10 is Mr. Keith Thurman. He's 27-0 with 24 KOs. Knock out anybody close to his division right now. Number 9, Vasyl Lomachenko. Young up-and-coming fighter who looks very, very good. 6-1, currently with 4 KOs. Number 8, Guillermo Rigondeaux, 17-0 with 11 knockouts. Number 7, a man we'll be talking about more in depth in just a little bit, Mr. Canelo Alvarez, 47-1-1 with 33 knockouts. And number 6 is Mr. Terrence Crawford, 29-0 with 20 KOs.
Bud. Bud's his nickname. At number 5, we got Manny Pacquiao, 56-5, two draws, 38 KOs. He'll be fighting Jesse Vargas November 5th. Winner of that should face Terrence Crawford next. Number 4, Gennady Gennadonovich Slovakin, also known as Triple G, 36-0, 33 knockouts now. And number 2, we have a tie between Sergey Kovalev, the light heavyweight champion of the world, 30-0, one draw and 22 knockouts. I put 52 knockouts. That's a typo. And Ward, 29-0 with 15 knockouts. They'll be fighting November 19th in Las Vegas. It's the best fight that can be made in boxing outside of – it's the best real fight that can be made in boxing outside of the mythical Mayweather Triple G fight. This is the best fight in boxing. Andre Ward, Sergey Kovalev, the winner of this fight will be the number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world, according to the Ultimate Fight Show. And number one, of course, for now is Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez, capturing his fourth world title at 118 pounds, 46-0, 38 knockouts. You can see that list on our social media outlets. Now, Bragg, you know, the time's flying. We're hitting our second hour here, and we got a UFC fight card coming up on Saturday night. But first, let's preview the boxing for this weekend. Now, there's a few fights we're going to touch. I'm just going to go over the fights that aren't on the Canelo pay-per-view very quickly. We got Hugo Ruiz against Hozumi Hasegawa for the WBC Junior Featherweight title. I like Ruiz in that fight. Bragg, who do you got?
Yeah, I think Ruiz gets the job done as well.
Yeah, and just for those of you keeping track at home, first weekend back, Bragg and myself 7-0 for boxing. The hell of a start. But we both like Ruiz to win that fight. Shinsuke Yamanaka against Anselmo Moreno. This is a rematch. WBC bantamweight title. Now, remember, Anselmo Moreno fought those amazing fight of the year type fights against Abner Mare. This is a fight now that he moved up. He lost to Yamanaka the first time. This is the rematch. They say they can learn more. I don't know. I'm going to go with Yamanaka again. I think he'll win a unanimous decision. I think he's got Anselmo's number, and I think his best days are behind him.
Yeah, I agree. I think Yamanaka wins this fight. I agree with you. Moreno is always tough, but I think he's on the backside of a pretty good career. But I think Shinsuke Yamanaka gets the Duke.
Christoph Glowowski from Russia defending his WBO cruiserweight title against Oleksandr Usyk. I'm going to go with Glowowski to defend his title by knockout in the fifth round.
Once again, we agree here. I think he gets it. I had it written down to 6, so we're pretty much in agreement on that as well.
Great minds think alike, especially when you're undefeated with your picks. All right, let's get to the pay-per-view now. We got Saddam Ali against Sol Coral. This is an IBF bantamweight title fight. Ali, he's one of the guys from the 2012 Olympics, part of De La Hoya's stable. I think he's going to get the job done, and I like Ali to win that fight by unanimous decision.
And once again, we agree on this. I think Ali wins this fight. I think it's going to be a pretty wide UD.
Absolutely. Oscar's nephew, Diego De La Hoya, against Orlando Duvall. This is a junior featherweight title. I mean, not title fight, preview. Junior featherweight is 122 pounds. For those of you at home who don't have your 17 division weight class card next to you in handy, you got us here. Diego De La Hoya is not going to lose on one of his uncle's pay-per-views. They're building him. They want that De La Hoya name back out there. I like De La Hoya to win that fight by knockout in the third round.
Yeah, I agree. De La Hoya is not going to lose this fight. I say he stops him in the fifth.
All right, moving along on the pay-per-view now, we have Joseph Diaz against Andre Canchillo. Featherweight fight. Bragg, you have some interesting opinions on this one. Who do you got at this?
Yeah, I thought this was a fight we might actually disagree on. I like Joseph Diaz. I think a win here sets up a potential title shot for him. But Canchillo is a guy, he's aggressive, and as we've seen in the last two fights, he's got some tremendous knockout power. And I think he surprises Diaz a little bit here. I wouldn't necessarily call it an upset because I think it's a pretty close fight, pretty even fight on paper, but I think Canchillo gets the job done and stuns him with a knockout in the eighth round.
That's unbelievable because I put down Canchillo by TKO eighth round while you were talking. That's hilarious.
Hey, you know, one of the biggest criticisms we always get is that we don't argue much and we don't create a lot of drama on this fight. Listen,
yeah,
we're not here to we're here to entertain, but we're also here to inform. And as we mentioned, the proof is in the pudding. We give you the best information possible here at the Ultimate Fight Show. You're never going to go wrong listening to our picks and predictions, unless it's a CM Punk fight.
True, yeah. Let's not even mention him again. All right, the co-main event, we got Gabriel Rosado against Willie Monroe Jr. This is a middleweight fight. Everybody knows Rosado. He's 23-9. He's a tough banger, Mexican, likes to go out there. His biggest problem is that he doesn't box enough. He goes out there, gets hit with big shots, gets cut open, and then either gets the fight stopped on cuts or he gets knocked out late because he runs out of energy. Willie Monroe Jr., 20-2, six knockouts, not a lot of power, but a great amateur background, great boxer, young boxer, is going to use his jab footwork. This is a tough fight, Bragg, because if Rosado can hit Monroe early, he can knock him out. But the longer this fight goes on, Willie Monroe is going to do his thing. And I think Willie Monroe wins a wide unanimous decision here. Who do you got?
Wow. I'm actually going the other way here. I agree with you. I don't think Monroe's got a lot of power, so I don't think Rosado has to worry a lot about getting hit, getting cut here. I think Rosado proves that he can box here. He's got a lot more experience than, or I say a lot more, he's got more experience than Willie Monroe here. I think he's got something to prove. I think he comes out and tries to box. I think it's going to be close early, but I think Rosado squeaks out decision victory, possibly 116, 112, 115, 113. It's going to be a good fight, but I think Rosado actually pulls it out.
Which brings us now to the main event of the evening. Saul Canelo Alvarez, 47-1 with one draw and 33 knockouts against Liam Smith, 23-0, one draw, 13 knockouts. Smith defeated Pedrick Rozadovic by TKO in the first round in June. He's 5'10", he's got a 72-inch reach, 28 years old, orthodox fighter. He's heavy-handed, but he's heavy-handed for the junior middleweight division. He's never fought at middleweight. This fight is taking place at 155 pounds, which is 1 pound over the junior middleweight limit, so it can technically be considered a middleweight title defense. Canelo, on the other hand, defeated Amir Khan by knockout in the sixth round in a fight that I thought he was losing. That was in June. He's 5'9", 71-inch reach, orthodox, 26 years old. He's real well-rounded. Lot of fights for being 26 years old. You're talking about this is his 50th fight, Brad, and he's 26, and he's already fought Mayweather and went all 12, even though he got an ass-whipping 12 rounds to zero. He learned a lot, and, you know, he's being groomed to be the face of boxing. And that doesn't happen with a loss here. So it's no surprise. I think that the fight's going to be competitive for maybe 3 rounds. And then I think Canelo's going to take care of business. I don't know if he'll get him out of there as quick as he did with Khan, but I like Saul Canelo Alvarez to win this fight by TKO in the seventh round.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting fight because Smith comes up. He's a guy who he's looking to trade. This is a big step up in competition for him. The lights are going to be bright. He's going to come in with a lot of aggression. He's going to trade with Canelo. It's going to be a good defensive test for Canelo Alvarez. He's going to have to work his counterpunch, but I wrote down as well, seventh round TKO or seventh round knockout for Canelo Alvarez. I think he proves to be one of the top fighters in the world. I think he gets the job done after a first couple of rounds of feeling some punches. But I don't think he gets hurt. I think he withstands it and finishes in the seventh round.
All right, let's pivot now. We got a UFC fight night, Poirier versus Johnson. Not a lot of real good fights on this card, Bragg. It's going to be an early night here, the Ultimate Fight Show. But coming in here with a little bit of an edge, I went 8-2 through our first 10. Bragg, 2 back at 6-4. He's going to have to cover ground. Only 3 fights here. I don't know if you're going to be able to catch me, but we'll give the fans what they want. Let's go with the first fight we're going to cover here, the lightweight matchup between Rick Glenn, 18-3, against Evan Dunham. Now, we both know Dunham. Not a lot out there on Glenn. Brad, who do you got in this one?
Yeah, Rick Glenn, he's coming in, taking this fight on late notice when Evan Dunham's original opponent, Abel Terrell, got injured. Rick Glenn, he's a good fighter. He's a former World Series of Fighting champion. But Dunham is on a bit of a streak right now. I think he's a guy who can – it's going to take him down. It's going to be a pretty good contest. But I think Evan Dunham gets the unanimous decision victory.
Yeah, that's exactly where I'm going too, for all the same reasons. So we don't need to really dive into that. When we got Uriah Hall in the co-main event, 12-6 against Derek Brunson, who's 15-3. Hall, to me, just a lot of disappointment in that MMA career. A lot of promise coming out for the Ultimate Fight Show, loses in the championship, and then just wins a fight, loses a fight, wins a fight, loses a fight. What's going to happen here Saturday night, Bragg?
It's really tough to call because Uriah Hall has a very high ceiling as a fighter. The guy has all the potential in the world to be a star in mixed martial arts, but he cannot seem to put it together. After one fight of looking like a world beater, he comes back and really just disappoints, acts like he just doesn't want to be there. I'm against my better judgment here. I'm actually going to pick Uriah Hall. I think he's able to touch Derek Brunson and get him out of there and late in the first round. But if it goes any deeper than that, I think Brunson could win this fight. But I'm going to say Uriah Hall gets the victory with a TKO in the first round.
Yeah, I also say TKO in the first round. I think he knows what he has to do. He's got to go out there. He's got to use those quick feet and hands and that athleticism to bombard Brunson. But if Brunson touches Hall on the chin, he's going to sleep. So it's just going to be a question. I don't think you can let like a dangerous striker like Brunson hang around there, gets him out of there in the middle of the end of the first round. Which brings us now to the main event of the evening.
This is the moment UFC fans around the world have been waiting for. It's time!
It is time. Michael Johnson, Dustin Poirier for the main event here at UFC Fight Night. Johnson 16-10, Poirier 20-4. Poirier's ranked number 10 at lightweight. Johnson was ranked until he got a ass whipping at the hands of Nate Diaz. This is an interesting fight. Poirier, tough kid, likes to bang, but he's better with submissions. Johnson, good striker, nice kicks, good wrestling. If both of them are in shape and both of them are ready to fight, this could be a great fight for as long as it goes. Bragg, who you got?
I tell you, Dustin Poirier looks like a different fighter since he was at featherweight. He's now 4-0 since moving up to the lightweight division at 155. He's had 3 knockouts, which is, you know, normally that's unusual for somebody moving up in weight, but he's knocked out Bobby Green, Yancy Medeiros, and Diego Ferreira. Michael Johnson, like you said, he got humbled against Nate Diaz in a fight that he really needed to win in order to move up in the rankings. But I think Poirier continues his streak here. I think he wins this fight. I think he's able to control Johnson, use his superior wrestling to squeak out a decision victory.
You're going with Johnson?
No. I'm going with Poirier. I think Poirier's able to use his wrestling to control Johnson for the most of the fight, and I think Poirier gets the decision.
Yeah, I like Poirier by submission in the second round. I think first round, I could see the wrestling kind of wearing Johnson down and then him gassing and Poirier getting on his back and choking him out. So, Faraday, really, on all the fights that we picked this week, boxing and MMA, there was 11. We agreed on 10. So, we're either going to be really right or really wrong. I'm leaning towards the first one. But let's take a look ahead for next week. We got another UFC fight night, but this one is Chris Justino, Cyborg, against Lena Landsberg at 140 pounds, catchweight fight. That will be the main event. Also on that card, we have Roy Nelson against Antonio Bigfoot Silva in a heavyweight fight where both fighters are at the crossroads. And we have a featherweight fight between Philip Nover and former bantamweight champion Renan Barao moving up in weight. So that should be interesting. Bragg, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a real good show. Anytime, again, we talked about it earlier, Cyborg fighting is she's one of those fighters that you really need to see. She's an event fighter. Roy Nelson is always fun to watch. He's fighting Bigfoot, which should be just a complete slugfest. I expect to see 3 rounds of swinging in that fight. And Renan Barao has got a lot to prove now, moving up to featherweight. So should be a really interesting card. Thiago Santos also fights on that card. I'm looking forward to that, but we've got to get through this weekend first.
Absolutely. Boxing, after this weekend, not a lot of big fights for the next couple weeks. And then, again, we'll still, you know, pick title fights and top contender fights, but nothing really showcasing coming up until middle to end of October. So we're going to be staying with the MMA boys for a while here at the Ultimate Fight Show. Again, check us out on social media, also Blog Talk Radio. We're going to be – I talked to Greg Mitchell. We're going to be trying to get back on the loop there for Ultimate Sports Talk. And, just help us out. We've been getting a lot of followers. We've only been back for about 10 days, but the response has been great. Bragg, anything you want to say to the fans before we get out of here?
No, just appreciate everybody, all the support and love you've given us. Again, we just came back last week, kind of an impromptu show. This was a little more planned out, and I think we proved this is going to be a better show than last week. But, hey, it's been a hell of a lot of fun. Really looking forward to getting back into the groove and actually picking and actually winning some picks here. Last weekend I was a little disappointed in my MMA picks, but I think this weekend we should be back on track.
Absolutely. I know, you know, for the gamblers here that are listening, we like to do our locks and our underdog bet, but there's really not a lot this weekend. Again, the odds are Canelo's an overwhelming favorite, so I guess I would bet the under is probably where you're going to get your best money for that. So that's my pick for the week as far as that. MMA, Poirier-Johnson's pretty even fight. I would go with Poirier. Bragman's going with Poirier, so maybe go with Poirier. But that's about it for that. Next week, we're going to, continue to give you guys the best from MMA and boxing from around the world and, hopefully have a couple new little tidbits of information or some segments that are going to help make the show a little bit more well-rounded and listener-friendly. Bragg, tell the fans a little bit about, we were talking about the concept of the YouTube channel and all that other stuff.
Yeah, we're going to be playing around with some options in the next few weeks. Once I get settled in my new place, I'm going to start working on that, possibly doing a live video stream of the podcast, try to get a little more interactive with the fans as we do that. Again, more activity on the Facebook page and the Twitter page. Instagram's up at The Ultimate Fight Show. LC's been posting there. Just a lot going on. We're just trying to revamp this, kind of get this ramped up again. Give us a few weeks, and we're going to be inundated with a lot of new stuff here at The Ultimate Fight Show. Really excited and really looking forward to it.
Absolutely. And again, for those of you following me on Twitter or on the Instagram page, I've been posting a lot of FanDuel wins, daily fantasy picks. So, again, I like to give information out on that. And the Bragman and myself, we're going to start maybe incorporating some more topics into the fight show. So stay tuned for that in the upcoming weeks. So on behalf of the Bragman, Chris Bragg, I'm your host, LC, saying thanks for stopping by for another edition of the Ultimate Fight Show. Good night.
Are you ready?